Hey everybody, and welcome back to Becky Talks Parks. This is a podcast for passionate parks and recreation professionals who are raising the bar in the field and in their community. Join us as we talk to experts in the field who are making a difference just like you. The field of parks and recreation is changing, and the value is finally being recognized for what it is, an economic driver and a place for communities to grow and thrive. So if you're ready to hear from the best in the industry, stay tuned. We're going to get this podcast started right now. Hey everyone, hope you're doing well. Happy August. I wanted to get out another episode. This one is with a parks manager who has a lot of experience in programming, who actually met at the Georgia Recreation and Parks Association workshop back in April. And in this episode, we talk about programming for success. So how do you, as a programmer or as anyone in the recreation field, start to look at your programs in a more strategic way to find the things that your community actually wants, to manage your team and your expectations, and then to evaluate your programs and all that good stuff that goes along with programming. And so that's what we really get into today with the episode. I hope you guys enjoy this one. We're going to go ahead and get right into it. If you like this show or if you have any questions, you can always go to anchor.com and find this podcast and actually submit your own voice message, and you can submit questions or feedback or ideas. I'd love to hear from you and possibly feature you in the podcast. So that is all for now. Thank you guys so much. Have an awesome day and enjoy the episode.
Okay. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Of course. Well, I wanted to reach out to you because it seems like only a couple months ago, but when was the GRPA workshop that we had?
It was in April.
In April. Okay. So closer to 4 months ago. But that was a great event that you guys put on and in Douglasville, and I really enjoyed it, and it was just a great time. So I just want to thank you for having me out there, and I'm glad I got to meet you there because I actually got to listen to your presentation about programming. So I was excited when we reconnected and got to talk about some programming ideas here. But for those who aren't familiar with you, or don't know who you are, can you tell listeners a little bit about yourself and what position you're in right now?
Yeah, so my name is Chris Bass, and I am the Parks Manager here with the City of Douglasville Parks and Recreation Department. And for those of you who are not familiar with Douglasville, we are a metro Atlanta community. We're about 15 minutes from downtown Atlanta, so we're one of those neighboring communities. But like I said, I serve as the park manager here, and that title was a little misleading, but I wear many different hats in our department, with programming being one of the main components of my job.
Mm-hmm. That sounds very familiar, wearing many different hats and having to do many things not listed in the job description, but
right.
It's all-encompassing role. So I want to ask how you found your way into parks and recreation as a career and kind of the different steps that you took to get you into the parks manager role.
Yeah. So I started back in 2008 working part-time as an activity leader in one of our after-school programs. And I had been having some troubles finding a part-time job. So this one was open, and I applied and got it, and that's when I found my way into parks and recreation. It wasn't until the last day of school working at after school program when I knew this was the field that I wanted to be in, because of the impact that we had on those kids throughout the year. So that's where it started for me. And from there, I went on and was able to serve in some full-time capacities, to include recreation facility manager and program coordinator. So yes, that's definitely where I got started with parks and recreation and after school program.
Nice. Well, what's your day to day look like? I know it changes all the time because you have different different things to do as they come up. And I know you guys just ended summer camp, but what's a typical day in the life of a parks manager?
So because one of our main focuses right now is our CAPRA accreditation, I do spend a good part of my day focusing on that. But outside of our accreditation, our programming evaluation is a big component, making sure that we're actually giving our constituents what they need. And I know we'll talk about that a little bit later, but making sure that we're following what our program mission says, making sure that our facilities are up to par, and making sure that our staff are trained on how to implement our program offerings, and just keeping up the day-to-day operations of our parks facilities and recreation centers.
Mm-hmm. Well, good deal. And you guys have a beautiful park. Is that the one that I visited? Is that the one that you work at?
Yes, that's our main Parks Recreation office. So our admin office is housed here along with other recreation programs as well.
Mm-hmm. It was beautiful. And then you got the park right outside of it, which with a nice lake and walking track. And it's interesting because didn't you say that you have, was it the YMCA or the Boys and Girls Club pretty close by?
Yeah, so this is the first time I've ever seen this before. In our park, we have our recreation center and we have a Boys and Girls Club all within the same park. So unique to see that because usually Boys and Girls Club have their own piece of property. But that just shows the partnerships that we have here in the county with our Boys and Girls Clubs and other YMCAs here in Douglas County. So, yes, we
do. Yeah, that's cool. So during this discussion, I want to talk about programming. And I know that, you know, July is Parks and Recreation Month just ended. And summer camps is a big program that many Parks and Recreation departments have. But now we're going into the fall, and so it's always the question of, okay, what are we going to be offering, and how do we decide what is going to fill? Like, what are we actually going to get participation for, which a lot of times you don't know. And so I wanted to kind of ask you and get your thoughts on how to develop ideas for your programs and, like, how to test those out, and how do you know when to pursue an idea for a program?
Yeah, so we talked about this before during my presentation about how I kind of got the idea of offering programs based on community needs, community input. And you ask how to decide when it's time to offer that program. Well, if you're hearing your citizens say, hey, look, this is what we want, this is what we're interested in, then it's time to really pay close attention to that and figure out what ways you can offer those things that they're asking. I give an example of when I took on my first job as a facility manager. I came in with the mindset of, I have all these great ideas, you know, we're going to start a book club and an art club and all these different types of clubs in this community. But it wasn't until I had some program failures that I realized that this wasn't the right types of, these weren't the right types of programs for this community. Once I finally started talking to some of those citizens and talking to the kids that came into the area, I found that, hey, look, they're not interested in what I'm interested in. I'm not from this community. So first, definitely starting there, getting that input from those that you see every day, you know, even if it's as simple as having a conversation at the front desk with someone when they're signing in, getting that input. And I feel like that's more important than just your surveys. Finding out face-to-face what it is that you want. Where are our expectations for you? So mm-hmm. Starting there. And I give a good example of that. You mentioned fall is getting ready to come up on us, and we're trying to decide now as we develop our program guide for our fall season what new program offerings we want. And just coming in this facility that you visited, citizens say, look, once it starts getting colder outside, I don't walk as much. So what are some types of programs that you can offer from a health and wellness standpoint where I don't have to go outside, but I can still get a good workout inside this facility. So that's definitely one way. Looking at all the different obstacles, like I say, weather and time of season, you know, what's trending, trends are big. So definitely one way to determine what ways you want to offer those programs.
Yeah, I think it's great. And sometimes I think so much emphasis is put on surveys and getting, you know, the data behind it, which is always important. But oftentimes the best ideas just come from a conversation. And then being able to say, okay, I hear you. Let's kind of test this out. And then you mention it again to a larger group of people, and then they get excited about it. And then next thing you know, it's like, okay, well, now I have 20 people excited about this class, and that would be enough to run it. Like, let's do it.
Right.
And so what, once you start to develop that program and you try it out, how do you know if it's a success, or like, how do you measure the success of a program?
Well, again, to measure that success, you want to get your community feedback and find out for those individuals that have took advantage of the program, you know, what did you like about it? What did you dislike about it? But I measure the success of that program by going through and determining first what our outcomes are, you know, what are our objectives of this program. And then at the end of the program, we're able to sit down and decide, okay, if our goal or our objective was to develop kids serving techniques for a volleyball program, and then you go back and you look and see at the end if their serving techniques have gotten better, if they've learned what you've expected them to learn, then that's that being that program was successful. And sometimes people tend to determine the number of participants by the success of a program, but that's not always the case. Even if we're just reaching one, we've done our job, you know. So tying into program development of establishing those objectives and those outcomes will help determine if your program is successful or not.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I feel like the numbers are what people always go by, because if you don't reach a certain minimum threshold, then the program's canceled. So you know it's not a success if the program's canceled, right?
Right.
But you're right. If you set an objective up front, then you actually have something to measure it by. And when you, just out of curiosity, when you're developing your programs, do you actually go through like a formal program development or like a program summary sheet that says, hey, here's my idea, here's how much it will cost, here are the resources I'll need, and here are the outcomes? Or is it more kind of informal and more flexible to say, you kind of like have them in your head, or you might write them down on paper? So I'm just kind of curious about your system in actually developing those programs and getting them approved.
Yeah, so when I first started programming, I did utilize the more informal approach. And that was mainly because working in that smaller facility, I was the one that developed those programs and actually was the one who who offered the programs and who implemented the programs, who I was the instructor or, you know, or facilitator for that program. So everything was in my head, which it was okay because I knew myself. But as I grew in my career and I started working with other staff and my team got bigger, I realized that it's good to put that information on paper so that if I leave, someone can pick that up and say, okay, well, here is the plan, you know. And when developing quality programs, I think you have to take into consideration, one, you know, what the objectives are, but what's your budget for it? You know, what are we going to need? I often tell people, you know, develop a SWOT analysis for your program you're trying to start. What are our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats? And by doing that, putting all that on paper, you're able to say, okay, look, we've done our due diligence, we've crossed our T's and dotted our I's, and we have a successful plan. to in place. So definitely putting something on paper, having a formal process is beneficial when implementing programs.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. I think it can be tempting just to have it in your head or on a simple Word doc, but then when you actually put it in place and you can keep referring back to it. And then the other thing is, yeah, passing it on to the next parks manager, because no one likes to come in and be like, what's been going on for the last 6 months? How have you guys been operating? So it kind of sets up the rest of your team for success too. When it comes to some of your most successful programs, what have those been, and have any of those surprised you?
That's a good question. I think back when I worked in Columbus Parks and Recreation, I started a program that was, this might sound selfish, but it wasn't intended to benefit the citizens. It was a program for the benefit of my division. So in Columbus, we had a zero marketing budget. We had no funds for marketing and advertising. We couldn't put a commercial on TV. All thing we had was simply printing flyers or Facebook. So during our summer camp planning meeting, our staff were saying that, okay, we're losing our older kids, our 11 and 12-year-olds. We need to find something for them to do. Technology was our fight. You know, how can we incorporate technology in our summer camp so that, you know, the kids are able to have fun and do what they want to do, but they're still able to be engaged in our program? So one of the programs that we developed was a digital media camp. And in this digital media camp, we exposed kids to the world of digital media by creating short commercials and flyers and all types of different designs for us. But in return, we wanted to be able to use the commercials that they put together for advertisement to post on our local stations and our YouTube channels and Facebooks, just to kind of show, okay, look, we want to do something outside of just normal flyers. So it was a win-win for both of us. The department, we got some marketing materials free of charge, and the kids were able to utilize their technology. And if I'm not mistaken, I remember sitting in one of your sessions, or it was a session similar to it, and you talked about a app called InShot.
Yeah.
So after that, that was around the time when I developed this program, and the kids, they love their cell phones. So we allowed them the opportunity to make these videos, these commercials, ads through their cell phone by using InShot. So it was great. It was great win-win for both. So I would have to say that's one of the most successful programs.
Oh, yeah. I would say that's super successful. I mean, what a creative idea. It's like you have this need. Marketing, you know, you have to get your programs out, and yet you also have kids who are interested in digital technology, and it's like the best combination of those two worlds. So I love that story.
Yeah.
So cool. So Chris, what are there any other tips or tricks for programmers who may be just starting out in their career or in this role, and they kind of feel like they've got so many things going on, from marketing their programs to actually, you know, developing those ideas, getting community support and feedback, doing program evaluations, managing a team maybe. I mean, it's a lot that you have to do. From your experience, what kind of advice would you give them?
Yeah, so to a new programmer trying to find their way, I would definitely say, outside of getting that community input, stay abreast of trends in the field. I mean, there is so much happening in the world of recreation. You just got to be able to figure out how to connect the dots. And I tell people all the time, anytime I visit a neighboring recreation department, I grab a program guide, you know, and I get my best ideas from there. The NRPA magazine or our local state GRPA magazine has tons of different trends going on. I follow different Parks and Recreation departments Facebook page, you know, just to get ideas, visit their websites to see, you know, what are they offering, especially if there's a community that's similar to mine, to the makeup of my community. So, like I say, definitely keeping up with trends and reaching out to other recreation professionals. There are a lot of different Facebook pages to do that. You know, our Mentoring Recreation Professionals page is one. But, yeah, those are just some tips outside of the community involvement component to develop great programs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. And I think reaching out to other professionals, like you said, it's always surprising and so refreshing to me how open and welcome other recreation professionals are and giving away their ideas and telling about some of their successes and failures. And, you know, it's a great form of networking, but it doesn't have to, you know, only occur at conferences or at, you know, official networking events. It can just be as simple as going to coffee, and some of the, you know, best relationships that you can make or just come from a simple email or LinkedIn connection or, you know, just a follow up. So I think that's great advice. So when you are thinking about the next steps in your career, or maybe you just want to stay here for a while, but where do you see yourself in the future when it comes to parks and recreation?
Yeah, so long-term, I definitely could see myself being a parks and recreation director. So here, my transition from Columbus to Douglasville was more so to gain the opportunity to work with different parks recreation departments or divisions that I hadn't before, you know, learning more park operations, more strategic planning operations and budget operations. So definitely I'm trying to align myself so that I can be a parks recreation director somewhere down the road. And who knows after that?
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, good. Well, you've given a lot of advice and great stories about programming and about marketing and networking. So just want to thank you for your time. And, you know, before I get to my last question, but if someone wants to reach out to you, what is the best way for them to find you?
Yeah, so email is always the best way to get in contact with me. My email is BASSC@DouglasvilleGA.gov, or you can call my office here at Hunter Park in Douglasville. So either way, I'm here at your disposal.
Well, good. All right, so the final question of the interview is, what do you think it means to raise the bar in parks and recreation?
To raise the bar in parks and recreation, I think we have to show that we are essential to our communities. I think us as recreation professionals have to go out and tell our stories, and we have to show that we make an impact. You know, we love our public safety department. You know, we love our other municipality departments, but parks and recreation is key to the community because we save lives, whether it be through health and wellness or conservation or social equity. We save lives, so we have to be able to tell our story.
Yeah, okay, I love that. Well, Chris, thanks so much for your time today, and I'm excited to share this episode with listeners, so thank you.
All right, thanks.
So that was my interview with Chris Bass out of Douglasville, Georgia. Please definitely go connect with him on LinkedIn or send him an email if you have any questions or feedback about this episode. Hope to connect with all of you soon. If you like this episode, please rate it on iTunes. It really does help with the reviews, and I'd love to feature some of those on the podcast soon. So thanks again for all your continued support. Hope you guys have an awesome rest of your summer, and I will talk to you probably in September. Bye.